Since the fall of TriStar's Godzilla, Hollywood has been backwards and forwards with scripts and treatments for potentially reinvigorating the Big G. But it took legendary success with Clash of the Titans and Pacific Rim before audiences were ready, perhaps for a fresh look at the King of the Monsters. But with a bevy of more colorful sequels out now in the Monsterverse, does this origin still hold up, or is this fourth film that just has the singular titular name a bridge too far? Find out along with us on this week's super episode. This is Kaiju versus History, Godzilla.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your Halo jumping demo expert, Miles, and joining me is a Sarazawa who secretly has always wanted to see a Kaiju battle, Patrick.
Patrick, how are you doing, buddy? Oh, they have to fight? Oh, man.
Honestly, this is one of the things that I think people remember most from this movie because it became such a meme, the let them fight moment.
Ken Watanabe's scratchy voice, let them fight.
Why has the West failed Ken Watanabe so hard?
Like, what do you mean?
Like, they rarely give him like meaty roles. Like, he's a phenomenal actor. Like, yeah, they gave him The Last Samurai, and that's been about it.
They definitely treat him like another actor from this movie, a David Strathairn, who's, you know, mostly known as an accompanying actor, a character actor, you know, and
which Ken Watanabe, he's really not a character actor.
Yeah, Ken Watanabe is definitely a leading man kind of energy, and I've been enjoying his movies for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, he's had big roles, you know, Letters to Iwo Jima, The Last Samurai, Memoirs of a Geisha, but like, this is a guy who I thought was going to be, he's going to be our next big actor. And even when he got Ra's al Ghul for what amounted as an appearance,
yeah,
which I was to this day I'm still enraged about. Like, Liam Neeson's great as Dukar or whatever, but like, I the fact that we didn't get like a really passionate Ra's al Ghul performance out of him is criminal.
Well, that's all we got time for this week at the Ken Watanabe special.
I'm just saying, I love Ken Watanabe. I love that he plays a Sarazawa, a very different Sarazawa than before. And yeah, I'm excited to talk about this one. Obviously, you know, we're back in Godzilla land. This is back where we belong.
Happy holidays, Miles. I got you a present of an actual good kaiju movie this season. It feels like we've been, you know, a little bit.
It feels like we've been struggling for a little bit. I mean, I honestly loved Jelly Eyes. That was my.
Oh, yes. You love Jellyfish Eyes.
Sorry.
I was a big fan of Pacific Rim. I feel like I haven't watched
it.
Well,
we both knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised by both of our response to Monsters, what we started off the season with. But we are unfortunately not even halfway done with season 7 of the podcast here, the 2010s. There's a lot of movies and a lot of schlock in this season, but we were both excited about it because this season also has two legendary Godzilla films in it, and we finally get to talk about one of them this week. So yeah, this is our in lieu of our kind of holiday special, we're going to be doing a special long episode for 2014's Godzilla.
As a little treat for us.
Yeah, 2024 has been terrible. Crumb year, so finally get to look at this movie and finally start a new universe. You know, there have been Godzilla movies all over the 2010s and 2020s, but none really connected in, you know, either a series. I guess I'm talking about the Reiwa kind of era of Japanese Godzilla films. They've not really been connected outside of the three animated ones, which were obviously connected, but
which aren't those supposed to be like Shin Godzilla sequels?
I don't think so, but I thought
they were.
We'll have to research when we.
we'll get back to you on that later in the season.
But yeah, this movie, I don't think was planned to start off like a real meaty kind of series, but we are now 5 movies in and a television series.
2. There's a Skull Island animated show. Oh,
right. Two television series. You're right, Miles. And we have more on the horizon, potentially more TV, more movies for sure. And it's going very strong, which is super nice to think about. Godzilla movie, I feel like I'm ready for it to be the last one. And the big G in the modern era has not really disappointed me.
Oh, I'm never ready for it to be the last one. I want Godzilla movies till the day I die.
Well, that's the thing. We thought it was. That we thought the rights were going to lapse from Legendary, and Toho was just going to take them back and do their own Godzilla movies. And they thankfully decided not to.
Turns out there's lots of money to be made.
Yeah, they're okay with basically doing nothing and getting a ton of money.
Well, the thing is, it's not that they haven't done nothing, but we'll get to those movies later. But I think what happened was, you know, Godzilla, you know, at the end of the Millennium Era, you know, wasn't the global commodity at the time. And I think since then, one, people at large have fully adapted the information internet age and have had access to go back and watch these movies, to be exposed to articles about these movies, and just been exposed to some of these things in general that maybe they had never been before. Mm-hmm. And I think by 2014, we're ready for another attempt at Godzilla. And not only that, I think the idea of doing, I think audiences have proven to the studios that, hey, we don't need you to muck around. We want to see giant monsters. We want to see them fight giant monsters, and we want good stories to be told. And I think. You know, you mentioned that, you know, this wasn't planning on, you know, building a whole universe. But I think because the script is so strong and so meticulously crafted that the building blocks are there. They created mm-hmm. a whole world. Whether or not they got to sort of expand upon that was, you know, well, maybe not. But now that we are, you know, waiting for what, movie 6 of this franchise and season 2 of Monarch, going back and watching this movie and seeing everything they've actively built off of, from the mention of Monarch, which we immediately see in the next Kong movie, to even Godzilla in San Francisco, which is the catalyst of mm-hmm. one of the main characters in Monarch. Like, there's so many things that have been built upon with this movie that, like, yes, I definitely think they wrote this movie but just in case it was the only one. They wanted to just make a solid entry, but yeah. I also think they left several blocks to be built.
Well, unlike the TriStar Godzilla, they didn't kill off the main character and make them a villain in the movie. Godzilla survives this film, and, you know, we'll talk about it, but the radio or news broadcast that shows Godzilla walking back into San Francisco Harbor has, like, the question mark, like, city savior question mark.
Right.
And it's like
King of the Monsters,
King of the Monsters, San Francisco savior, something along those lines. And that's great. That's such a small thing, but that's all that's needed is for that to be planted in some people's minds. Like, oh, maybe people in this universe would like Godzilla, despite it destroying the city, because it stopped these other two monsters. And hopefully hopefully they found out about this. Like, people found out that they were about to be like 300 more of these giant bug kaiju, if not for Godzilla. So,
right. And I guess before we delve further, Patrick, what's in a title?
Have you heard Godzilla, the titular title right. character? That's what it's called. No, but as I mentioned in the intro, the 1954 original film, the 1984 return film, which we often call Return of Godzilla, but the Japanese title was just Gojira, and the 1998 TriStar movie, along with this one, are all just called Godzilla or Gojira. And unlike the 1998 film, I feel like this one actually is deserving of that title. I feel like those other three started such a huge movement, such a huge series of film, the Showa era, the Heisei era, and now the Legendary or Monsterverse series. And if you'd asked me that, you know, 10 years ago when this movie came out, I'd be like, ugh, I wish they hadn't. But in retrospect, it definitely earned it. It earned being its own variation of Godzilla and has continued to surprise me with its popularity, at least. Mm-hmm. But yeah, love them or hate them, Monsterverse Godzilla, really some staying power at this point. And I think if it continues on, it will even, for me, enjoyment-wise, will rival the Heisei Godzilla series, which is my favorite right now, you know?
Right.
We'll see when these scores shake out here. But yeah, that being said, Godzilla is known the world over as Godzilla since the 1954 movie. It was localized as some weird things here and there. Godzilla King of the Monsters for the U.S. adaptation in 1954. But from this point on, I mean, this is the 60th anniversary when this movie came out of Godzilla. Godzilla at this point is as much of a household name, I think, as Superman, you know, Spider-Man.
Right.
Other huge cultural impacts. And it's, I don't even think there's another Japanese character that's as, you know, well known as Godzilla.
Well, I would argue Goku.
No. My father does not know who Goku is. You know,
I don't know. I would also contend the Power Rangers.
Maybe as a team.
Sailor Moon.
No. I think Godzilla still holds out.
I would hazard to say Goku is probably up there to be like perfectly honest.
You are crazy to think he tops the.
I'm not saying he tops him. I'm just saying that like he's another ubiquitous, yeah, like Japanese.
Oh,
like,
I'm not saying that there aren't other things that are pretty ubiquitous from Japanese culture, but I would say, I mean, Godzilla is not just the highest of Japan's kind of exports. I think it's just one of the top kind of cultural icons that will transcend language barriers. So the movie just being called Godzilla everywhere, I think, is a testament to that. Even though when they were filming this movie, and I guess before when they started writing the script, its fake working title was Nautilus, which I think is an interesting, you know, they sometimes do that. Like it was Blue Milk for The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. It was Blue Sun.
Oh yeah. Blue Sun. But yeah, this movie, is just
the Blue Harvest. I'm sorry.
This film was just known as Godzilla in every single release, every single translation. So, yeah, 2014's Godzilla. This was directed by Gareth Edwards, who we've also talked about on the show before. Produced by Legendary and was distributed by Warner Brothers. And we'll talk a little bit about their kind of co-investment into this film, and made in partnership with, of course, the rights from Toho. And mm-hmm. just like the TriStar Toho film, this movie, the American production squad was headed by a Japanese director, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But just like the TriStar movie, they were given rules they couldn't really break for a Godzilla adaptation. Godzilla had to be born of nuclear fire and had to, what else? There were some design aspects, I think, they had to give them maybe after TriStar's Godzilla. And I think they said probably similarly to the 1990s, Godzilla couldn't eat people, which is something that they, you know, have not really had Godzilla do since the 50s.
They gore. Certainly have them do it now.
gore kind of stuff they don't do. Other monsters are fine, but I'm talking about like human beings. But
in Minus One, he chomps on some people.
Oh, yeah. It's fine when they do it, Miles. It's not right. Cool when other people do it. But yeah, so this movie is a reboot, a reimagining. It's one of the few reboots of Godzilla as a concept that ignores all other continuity. I feel like TriStar obviously did it as well, but most of the Japanese Godzilla movies use the 1954 film as a jumping off point, at least a lot of the Millennium films and the Heisei film did not, right? Gosh, it's been a while. Does Return of Godzilla, is this a second Godzilla?
Yeah, it's supposed to be the sequel to the original. Mm.
But because none of the other movies.
Right, correct. They kind of Halloweened it.
I was about to say, it's a very similar kind of film universe. This one takes a very similar origin story for Godzilla, but takes it in its own direction.
So yeah, I remember last time that we had talked about this, maybe we mentioned this in the last week, but certainly within the last few episodes, you said you did not see this in theaters, correct?
I'm pretty sure I didn't, because I was trying to get my wife to go with me. I was very excited about it. And she actually saw it with a group of students, because she was teaching a monster literature course at the time.
Right. And you had asked to go, and she was like, no.
So she saw it without me, and I couldn't go on her field trip either. So I was left without someone to go to. And I mean, I go to movies all the time by myself, so I don't know why I just didn't go.
Literally did yesterday.
I was about to say, at the time, perhaps I was just very busy, but I did not make it to see this in theater. I saw it like immediately when it came out on DVD, and I feel like that was the start of the era where, like, maybe you're waiting like 4 or 5 months and then you have access to it in some way, shape, or form. So I am pretty bummed I didn't get to see this on the big screen, and I was really hoping this year, 2024, its 10-year anniversary, maybe that they would do some re-releases. But I hope the next...
Yeah. Oh, no, they released Minus One back in theaters instead. Darn.
Yeah, I really hope that the next Legendary movie come out. I want them to do more watch-throughs, you know, like they did it for the Avengers films, where you could watch like the entire series
entire Infinity Saga or something.
I'm ready to watch all of the MonsterVerse movies kind of back to back on the big screen. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
You know, it's so funny, because as someone who watches AEW All Elite Wrestling, when they were on TNT, Wednesday is usually when they have like a movie that comes on like around like dinner time and ends around 8 o'clock. And because TNT, Turner Broadcasting, is owned by Warner Brothers Discovery, guess what kind of movies they played all the time? Typically movies they either had licensed or their own. And every Legendary Godzilla movie was certainly on like many times. I was watching the last 15 minutes of all those Legendary movies, like before, or sometimes the entire thing before wrestling, like every week. And I'm like, oh, Godzilla and wrestling, what an amazing night. I saw this movie back when they used to do them. They don't do them anymore. Midnight shows. This is kind of the end of the midnight show era. Because now they just flat out put them on Thursdays. They don't even front anymore. It's like, yeah, its release date is the 15th, but we're going to put it on the day before anyway. But I remember going with some friends, another one who was like equally into like Japanese cinema and kaiju films, but a little bit more of a snob, because he was just like, I'm just not going to accept an American Godzilla. And I was like, okay, dude, shut up. I love you, but shut your mouth. I don't know if that's changed now. I haven't brought up the subject to him in quite some time. But I remember being really jazzed about this movie. I remember having some reservations, and I was very happy with it, just because they didn't screw it up. Like, that was the big thing.
Yeah, I was definitely afraid.
Yeah, because I mean, even though I have become a little bit of, I don't want to say a defender or an apologist, but I accept the 98 TriStar. I have a Steelbook 4K of that one, hilariously enough. But at the same time, like, I also recognize it's not a Godzilla film.
I'll say it's very good kaiju movie. Very good kaiju movie, not very good Godzilla movie. You are correct. And
so I really wanted a Godzilla film. And I remember being a little nervous because a lot of the Japanese audience did make fun of the initial design because he's a chonky boy. Although he's very cute. He's very cute. But I do wish they had not slimmed him, just made him look, give a little bit more of that iconic look to him.
Oh, yeah. Well, just wait for the sequels, I guess.
Oh, I know. I'm just talking about my initial reactions when the film came out. But I was generally pretty happy, primarily because it wasn't just an attempt to remake Godzilla. It was an attempt to remake Gojira. It was, oh, no, we know what you want. And Godzilla is going to fight a monster. In fact, he's going to fight more than one monster.
Yeah, and that's something that I don't even think the trailers made abundantly clear, because I don't know.
No.
They showed the Mutos, which we'll talk about in very good details. So it's like, oh, well, Godzilla gets to fight something at the very least, we knew from the trailers. But yeah, it was kind of a surprise when we do get this tag team battles at the end of this movie. Something that, you know, has not been done in a lot of Godzilla movies in general, but definitely you wouldn't think on an origin story like this they would go all out for. And I'm so happy that they did, Miles.
I am too. And not only that, but like you can tell that Legendary really wanted to put like some heat on it. Like they didn't want to just give you like, oh yeah, here's a movie. Like, no, we're going to bring in some names. Here's Aaron Taylor Johnson. Here's Ken Watanabe, Elizabeth Olsen, Juliette Binoche, Sally Hawkins, and Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston at really the hottest point of his career, because that same year, or no, the year before, 2013, is when Breaking Bad ended. And he had obviously been in some films before but I don't think he was ever really kind of like the main character in
he wasn't given like movie star level billing like he was in this one, because they treated it like a big deal that they got Bryan Cranston. They should have.
I mean, yeah, that's so crazy that was 10 years ago, but from then onward, I mean, he's been really just he can like, choose whatever movies he wants to do, really.
And, well, like, and I mean, he appeared in some notable movies even during the run of Breaking Bad, like Lincoln Lawyer and Drive and Contagion.
Oh yeah, he like I said, he was in great movies. He was in Argo.
Was
kind of a side character in that Argo film.
John Carter, which is a movie that I will always defend.
I still need to see it. I don't think I've ever seen
John Carter. I think you'd have fun with it.
He was terrible along with everyone else in Total Recall.
I still never saw that remake.
It's fine. You don't have to. But yeah, this
Colin
one,
Farrell, though.
This one kind of, I would say more so launched his like main actor vibe, because he definitely gets very top billing in this film as Joe Brody. Is that his character's name? Joseph? Joe Brody?
Yeah. Aaron Taylor Johnson.
The father of, no, Ford Brody is Aaron Taylor Johnson. Ford,
yeah.
Bryan Cranston is.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
And I will say I think it's why some people don't like this movie as much as it does. The movie really, the trailers seems to point to him being the main character. And unfortunately, spoilers, he does die halfway through the film.
So this is honestly, I think the movie's biggest. One of the real criticisms I have with this film is I don't think, one, that was the wrong time to kill. I don't mind that the character does die. He should have been a consistent presence throughout the film, because the trailers were great, because they take lines from him like being interrogated at the plant and he's like sounding paranoid, and he's like, it's not a typhoon, it's not a this, like something is out. It's incredible. It's an incredible performance, and it's an incredible like soundbite in the trailer, because it really amps up like what's out there. And I think this movie, the script, is a savage disservice to both Cranston and the character of Joe Brody. It's the biggest problem I have with this film. And a lot of people like didn't love like Ford's journey. I'm fine with that. My biggest problem is the death of Bryan Cranston in this movie. I think that they only got him for X amount of time, or maybe they did write it this way. I'm not 100% sure, but I think they wasted their greatest resource. Also, I know you need to have like your your male tears moment, but like, you had Juliette Binoche and you wasted her.
Yeah, she dies in the first 5 minutes of the movie. It was real,
like,
real.
Like, I get it. Like, it's good because, like, I love the ideas. Like, I want to look what killed my wife in the eyes, blah, blah, blah. It's good. You don't hire Juliette Binoche to play something that you could have had any, you know, line actor pull off, you know?
Yeah.
I understand that this is a big production and they do that. They hire big names for these small roles. But like, and in fact, and this is no disrespect, I promise, absolutely none. But I feel that maybe, just maybe, Juliette Binoche should have had Sally Hawkins' character.
Yeah.
And I love Sally Hawkins and I love her in The Shape of Water. She's a phenomenal actress. But
oh man, I just watched her in Paddington and she's amazing.
Oh, Paddington's so good.
So good in that movie. But yeah, she gets very little to do in this movie. She gets sadly very little to do in the next movie as well.
I know. But that is my biggest criticism is that you have such a stacked cast and you don't utilize
stacked. I mean, it definitely is, I would say, the best cast of any of these Godzilla movies. And I don't know if there's like a way to kill off Joe Brody later in the movie, Brian Cranston's character, because
you could have done something maybe in San Francisco, or maybe he's the one in the boat and the bomb does go off.
Yeah, I don't, because they had to. Yeah, I think his death in the end of the movie, you know, there would be no problems with it. Like, maybe he gets back to San Francisco with Ford, and while Ford is dealing with the military side, he like goes in to try and find his daughter-in-law and grandson. And that's how he gets
across,
like,
comes across the hatching eggs or something, you know, like,
yeah.
And so, helps something. Them and gets killed, like helping them. Like, I would be fine with that. But yeah, like,
that's the thing.
I felt like the end of his character arc, just especially after all you went through, I'd actually like to read a novelization of this, because I bet there's even more, like, you know, background stuff, because I really wanted more of that for Joe. I think there was a prequel comic, but yeah, I mean, that is my real biggest issue. Some of my issues that I had when it first came out have no longer become issues for me, because and let's move on to this part before we really talk about some of the story aspects. But we do have a brand new monster in this film.
Two, like you said, yeah.
Yes, but they're the same species.
You want to talk about the mutos? You want to talk
the
about
mutos,
the designs and things? Yeah. So mutos in the film are the term I have written down here is kind of like UFOs,
which I do like.
Yeah, it's a, oh gosh, I have it written down somewhere. I am absolutely certain, but I forget what it stands for. It's like,
what, the mutos?
What does it stand for?
It is, oh gosh, I'm now blanking on it. Massive unidentified terrestrial organism.
Yeah, so it's very similar to a UFO kind of name, and I enjoy that about them. I wish they had just gone ahead and named the species, because I don't feel like mutos works very well.
No, it doesn't roll off the tongue. Like, it's cool for like a thing. I don't even know if they have an actual name in universe
name.
I don't remember.
I don't think so. I don't think they do. But I enjoy them as kind of antagonists. I enjoy their design.
When they first came out, I was like, oh, I don't love that we always have to use some sort of insect design in giant American monster movies.
Yeah.
However, I like, upon reflection, I do love that this seems to be like, okay, we want to have Godzilla versus the American idea of a giant monster, and something that's not dissimilar from the recent successful giant monster Clover.
I will say there's a lot of Cloverfield monster in this final design.
The more time passes, the more I'm like, no, I like this choice. I like the fact that, no, we're going to show that Godzilla is the true king, because we're going to take out the American equivalent of what they've got right now.
Design wise, I feel like there's also a good amount of Gamera villain in the mutos as well.
You're talking about the way that their heads are shaped. Yeah.
And kind of, and I mean, you can also say that there's a little bit of King Kong in that they're kind of like ape-like and they walk on their knuckles almost, but more so it is insect. It's a little bat-like. So it feels like a lot of Gamera villains kind of all rolled into one. And we'll talk about Gamera similarities a little later on, but this movie, they went through a lot of designs. Gareth Edwards, concept artist Matt Alsop, went through a lot of stuff, and I highly recommend, if people are interested in this movie, look at some of the concept art that we're going to be talking about. But some really cool things. They took inspiration from Bruce, the great white shark from Jaws, different aspects of the monsters in the King Kong movies, the arachnids from Starship Troopers, xenomorphs, all kinds of stuff to come up with this. And yeah, it's insect-like, but they're also kind of a little reptilian in some ways. They're an interesting monster. I will say I really like the, I forget what it's called, but you know, when there's like large differences between the male and the female of the species.
Yeah, because the female is the much larger one, right?
She's larger, and maybe that's because she's like, you know, brooding at the time, but I don't think the female can fly. At least we never see her in this movie. Maybe that's like a different molt. But the male, the smaller male, is the one that flies in the movie. So there's a good amount of differences between them. And in the fight that they have, the 2v1 Mutos versus Godzilla fight, they definitely employ some different tactics. And Godzilla's, you know, kind of beaten down by the two of them.
Yeah, it's something that, like, I wish Godzilla, like, he does, but I wish he got a little more licks in sooner. This reminds me of a classic wrestling match where you allow the heel to get a lot of offense and kind of dominate the babyface for a little bit so that you have the eventual, like, complete comeuppance. And again, I love and something the MonsterVerse does, and we'll talk about that more as this series progresses, I love that my kaiju battles look like wrestling matches, and that certainly happens more and more as we go on. Fact that at one point, like, we get legit body slam and suplexes on Godzilla's part, and I'm legit had to be like told to calm down.
Well, when King Kong comes into Legendary Series, yeah, it's over. It's a wrestling.
It's wonderful. But I do. Upon this watch, I was like, man, I wish Godzilla got a little more offense in sooner, because they do make him kind of a little bit of a punk at first.
Well, let's talk about Godzilla, and let's talk about Gary Goji, the name for the suit design. Gary Goji is named after Gareth Edwards, the director. The Legendary movies designs for Godzilla.
When you say it, it sounds like Gary, like the Kenneth.
Gary Goji. they are indeed named after the directors in the series, which I feel like the Heisei films were named after the villain, maybe, like, so, or the name of the movie. But yeah, we can go through these.
I certainly am pleased with the design they ended up with Godzilla, because I saw, like, a lot of the concept art was still looking very too Jurassic Park T-Rexy.
Oh boy. So they went through like 100 different designs for Godzilla to end on the one that we got. I think we're pretty darn lucky, but
we are. There was a couple that looked very similar to, like, oh, let's do a really, like, high def version of, like, the 70s, which on one hand I love, but I do love that this Godzilla does look, act, and move like an actual animal.
And they really lean into that even more so as the series goes on, some various aspects of Godzilla
like being a kitty cat.
Well, it's looking like a cat in the most recent Godzilla X Kong film. Godzilla versus Kong, we get like a straight up crocodilian like four-legged attack by Godzilla, which was awesome to see on screen. It's like not something I ever thought we'd see. But yeah, this movie, Godzilla, was designed by Weta Workshop. And like I said, went through hundreds of different versions. Gareth Edwards said that he probably felt some of the most kind of burden to get the look right. He said he wanted to make it immediately recognizable as Godzilla, and, you know, quote, it was very important to him that this design feel like it was made by Toho. And
I think he largely succeeds with that.
I don't know. I feel like it is a maybe just because the effects are so good in this movie. I feel like that takes it away from, you know, what we're used to, which is a lot of pseudimation, and takes it into another realm.
Mm-hmm.
But design wise, they did make it so like this could be a suit that someone wore as well, even though there is no at any point in the film there's
mocap.
Motion capture, which we can talk about, but yeah, I feel like they did a good job, especially, you know, a lot of the designs, the initial ones, very T-Rex, which I don't think is good.
No, it's you know, it's not
very draconic in some of them. They had some that looked very much like a new updated version of the Stan Winston Godzilla project from the 90s, which while looked great, was just not going to play, I think, in CGI.
I fully agree. And actually, if you look at Godzilla, where it has like all of the main Godzilla suits kind of in a row, where you have the 54 and onwards to 2014 Shin and the Kong films, when you see them all together, it actually looks like a really solid evolution from the Millennium era, mm-hmm. specifically the Final Wars one. I'm looking at them like side by side right now, and you're like, you know what? No, this really does work. I'm going to share that with you right now so you can kind of see what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I've gone through all these. I'm doing research for this has been such a joy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this art, going from Millennium Godzilla to this one, you know, is...
It works. And
it's a little jarring, but yeah, it's good.
It's jarring because it's a guy in a suit, but at the same time, like, the fact that they were able to make this you know, obviously multi-million dollar CGI Godzilla feel like Godzilla, despite being a little chonky boy. He's an absolute unit. I do really like this design. I think they lightly improve it as the series go. And I like that they don't drastically change it. It keeps the core design, but they do a couple flourishes that make him, specifically in the next one, that make him feel more like Godzilla.
So, and I think they describe it as, you know, he's been resting for a long time, and he does technically, I think, shed some weight in the sequel. The director is Doherty for the next movie. So it's, Doji or Doey Goji is the next design. Yeah, this one I've written in my notes is
just funny because this one's much more doughy.
Thick with two C's, double thick.
Oh, yeah.
The legs especially get slimmed down a little bit.
Especially by the time you get to the most recent film.
Oh, yeah. Partially, I feel like this was for believability's sake that the legs were so thick in this movie because they were very... you know, serious about getting something on screen that felt real. And they definitely do that in this movie. But, you know, because of the inverse square law, kaiju sized creatures are basically impossible with, you know, physics being what they are. But yeah, sauropod dinosaurs like, you know, Brontosaurus or Brachiosaurus or whatever, they have these massive elephant like tree trunk legs. And so that was given to the Goji here, even though, you know, I prefer that they do that than some of the designs that they went with had more of a T-Rex kind of leaning forward
look to them. Which I absolutely dislike.
We already did that.
Go make a Jurassic Park movie.
Yeah, if you want a dinosaur, get to Steppen Gareth Edwards. Wait, is he doing a Jurassic Park
movie? He is. He's doing the next Jurassic Park or Jurassic World movie with She Who Must Not Be Named.
He must not be named.
Who is the actress I dislike a lot?
You know, yes. I was about to say it's the girl from the first. I'm very excited about that.
I Jurassic can't be worse than Dominion.
I mean, Edwards, you know, talking about the designs, said, quote, "The way I tried to view it was to imagine Godzilla was a real creature and someone from Toho saw him in the 1950s, then ran back to the studio to make a movie about the creature and was trying their best to remember it and draw it. And in our film, we get to see him for real." And
I like that. That's a very good answer.
I like it. Yeah. So this would be like the inspiration for the rubber suit. And this is, you know, for their part, like I said, they tried to make a very real creature, of something that could exist in nature. So they drew inspiration from, you know, cats, crocodiles, all kinds of animals to bring this Goji to life. Can we backtrack a little bit and talk about the historical context and the history?
Yeah, let's do it.
Production of this movie, because this came out and was written around the time of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant disaster, the accident that caused a meltdown after the Tohoku earthquake and tsunami in 2011. And that is...
which will also inspire the next Japanese Godzilla film.
I was about to say, that incident resonates, I think, with Japan very similarly that 9/11 did here in the United States. It just, like, everything had to be kind of response or reaction to this tragedy that happened on Japanese soil. You know, not just the nuclear power plant going critical and basically rivaling even the prior worst, you know, one of the worst, nuclear accidents in human history with Chernobyl. But, you know, and they had two options with this script. They could either kind of ignore that aspect or lean into it a little bit. And there was an interview with the director, with the screenwriter about, you know, what was like making the movie in this time. And in an interview, they said, you know, quote, as we were writing the film, the horrible events of Fukushima happened and we had to make the decision. Do we stay away from it or do we acknowledge that you've opened up Pandora's box of nuclear power? When it goes wrong, it really goes wrong. And while they don't really talk about Hiroshima or Nagasaki or the other abuses of nuclear power in this movie,
they reference it because of Serizawa's father's watch.
Supposedly they weren't allowed, or they decided not to make overt references because they were told to by the United States military, which is hilarious, even, you know, 70 years after the war is over.
Whatever. That is America in a nutshell, isn't it?
Well, you know, the production design of this movie had access to use several real aircraft carriers and naval units for the production. But yeah, that was one of their stipulations. Supposedly that's what I've read online. Well,
they ended up referencing it anyway because of that pocket watch.
Yeah. I do think the sequels and certainly the series goes into a great deal, but we are led to believe that Godzilla, you know, the Bikini Atoll testing, quote unquote, was not nuclear testing, but them trying to kill Godzilla, which is interesting idea. Very similar to TriStar, the French.
Well, and it's also similar to Minus Godzilla. One, where it's like this creature existed and we just made it worse.
Yes. Yeah. So the most important aspect, I think, of the story of this movie coming to fruition is it started with the rights for a 3D Godzilla movie, basically like a theme park ride almost film, like an IMAX, like half hour kind of experience. The rights to that movie from Toho being procured by Big G director Yoshimitsu, who we've not gotten a chance to talk about since the film Godzilla versus Hedorah. He was the director of the 1971 film. When did that movie come out?
Oh, don't make me look.
I'm just looking in our notes. Hedorah was 71. Yeah. So he's been in the kaiju game for 40 some odd years. And like I said, he was trying to make a 3D experience, IMAX experience, with funds that he would get from producers in the US, and using kind of plot elements from Hedorah. It was going to be like Godzilla versus like a big swarm of creatures, which to me sounds very Gamera, like, because we already saw that in Gamera 2. But yeah, the original project was called Godzilla to the Max, and eventually
this terrible title
Godzilla to the Max,
it sounds like an anime, like where you would have like a bunch of like Remember the G-Force line they did for a little bit in the late 90s? It sounds like it'd be like that.
Sounds awesome. But yeah, this fell through, and instead Bano was approached by U.S. producers and producer Brian Rogers and another Japanese film producer, Kenji Okahiri. And in 2008, they decided to expand the rights for a potentially a 3D feature length film. So this they went back to Toho to get permission to do this. And, you know, Toho hadn't made a Godzilla movie at this point in 3 years since Final Wars, or 4 years since Final Wars, and didn't have plans anytime soon. So they allowed them to take meetings. And in 2009, they went to Legendary Pictures with a proposal for a more serious and probably grounded Godzilla project. And in 2010 is when this film got the green light. So this movie from start to finish was really in production for about 5 years, which is a long time. You know, they made the announcement that year that they would co-finance Legendary Pictures with Warner Brothers in a 75-25 split. So a little bit of the funds coming from the distributor Warner Brothers, but most of this being a Legendary Pictures film. Legendary Pictures, we've talked about a little bit, Miles, but they went from being nowhere on my radar to being the production company that made all of my favorite movies ever. You know, it seemed like they were just
it certainly happened when they started a franchise, a little film called Batman Begins.
And not just Batman Begins, but all of Christopher Nolan's films.
Exactly. It starts there.
Yes. And I mean, gosh, they're doing so much more. They're doing a Gundam movie.
I think it's moved on from Legendary now. I think the Gundam
it's
movie
still
is
on their website.
I know it is, but like they just made an announcement like a week ago of like,
oh, that's
pretty
funny.
They like the it's no longer at Netflix. The director is no longer doing it. I don't know if Brian K. Vaughan's still involved. Like, they're starting from scratch again. This has been happening with both Robotech and Gundam for like 20 years.
But yeah, at this point they had already had like one of the highest grossing superhero movies of all time. They had the Hangover film series, which is like the highest grossing comedy films of all time. And we already talked about it, but they did Clash of the Titans at this point when they were in production for this movie.
Batman Begins was their first movie, huh?
In 2010, that the Clash of the Titans did pretty well. And I think that is what allowed them to assume a bit of more of a gamble on paying a larger IP. Because I just imagine that the IP rights for Clash of the Titans did not cost that much, or didn't cost as much as, you know, the payout to Toho to make a Godzilla film. So 2011, Gareth Edwards was announced as director, and believe it or not, the original plan was to have the movie come out in 2012, which is super fast, but that obviously got pushed back a number of years, and I think very rightly so, was worth coming out on the 60th anniversary of the original film. There was not a Toho film, and maybe that was because of the agreement that this movie and their next movie wouldn't kind of coincide.
I think Toho was still pretty happy to let Godzilla rest for a little bit, since, you know, they were planning to have the character go into indefinite hiatus after Destoroyah, and then made the Millennium series as a result of TriStar's film.
I was about to say, but even I think when they finished with Final Wars, I don't think the plan was to let Godzilla rest more than 10 years, which would have been 2014, but another, do something on the anniversary. But the Shin Godzilla will not come out until 2016. So they'd have to wait a little bit for that. Gareth Edwards, you know, we talked about already, the director, in our review of his, you know, first kaiju film, Monsters. He does an amazing job with this movie. In an interview, he said, quote, "This will definitely have a very different feel from the 1998 film. That's a bit of an understatement. Our biggest concern is making sure we get it right for fans, because we know their concerns. It must be brilliant in every category, and because I'm a fan as well." And without addressing anything specific, everyone knows how important it is to get it right. And that is, I you know, in a lot of ways, you know, you gave the TriStar Godzilla super high marks for its importance. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you there, because if that movie hadn't been so bad, well, if it hadn't been so bad,
if we recorded video, if they could see your face when I said 10 out of 10,
I mean, I went into a very brief coma at the time. I think it's very important because of
it really is. I'm not just goofing.
How kid gloves, how delicate the IP has been treated since then. I mean, not including the Millennium series, which is just kind of throw whatever at the wall, but definitely in Hollywood, they don't want to poison a potential well of money.
Well, but because we're no longer in the practical effects era, and you know, we're not doing guys in rubber suits, which I still love to see some of that too. These movies are extremely expensive to make. Mm-hmm. And only get more expensive, it feels like. So they really got to put their best foot forward every single time, because that could result in a colossal, colossal failure for the company.
Yeah. And Pacific Rim was close. It did very poorly domestically. We talked about, and I'm so surprised that Pacific Rim got a sequel, but
The international numbers, like, they're like, okay, well, yes, the world likes this movie, so
that movie did very well internationally. This one we'll talk about did very well internationally, but they went through, and it took about a year or so for them to get a script agreed upon. The story is by David Callahan, who wrote the Expendable films, and the full script was given over to pretty much a complete unknown, a writer named Max Borenstein, who is the only one with the screenplay credit, which is crazy because this movie was touched up by a lot of people. David S. Goyer, who did the Dark Knight trilogy, Frank Darabont did script doctoring, the director of Shawshank Redemption. Mm-hmm. Maybe we probably have him to blame for Bryan Cranston's early departure from the film. But Max Borenstein, you don't really hear much about, but he's written or produced almost all of the legendary kaiju films, the Monarch TV show. And you don't hear about him because this is the first thing he's gotten to basically go off the ground. But he has been named on the Hollywood blacklist for a ton of unproduced properties, including, I think, the prior year to him writing this, he did a treatment for a Jimi Hendrix film for Legendary, but just he's written a ton of scripts. None of them have kind of gone to production at this point. So, but yeah, all the he does
that Ben Affleck movie that kind of came and went, Hypnotic.
Yes, he was a writer for that film.
Yeah, I haven't taken the time to see it. But you, honestly, whenever Ben Affleck does one of these little thrillers, they always turn out to be really good.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's the production history of this movie. There's a million decisions for this film to get it from page to screen. You know, we've already talked about the casting and how probably that's like one of the best aspects of this movie. Despite Aaron Taylor Johnson and Elizabeth Olsen, I had a great deal of time believing in their chemistry. They only really have like a scene together, which is crazy, in the entire film. But they're also in the same time frame, brother and sister in the Marvel universe.
In the Marvel movie. Yeah. So that's what a lot of people love to like goof on. It's like, oh, you know, the siblings are married. And it's just like, well, no, you have two young actors who got big in this. I mean, Elizabeth Olsen's been kind of a slow burn getting big since she did Martha, Mary, Marlene. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. You know what movie I'm talking about.
She's an amazing actress. Aaron Taylor Johnson is an amazing actor. And
yes, he is.
She just had an interview recently where she's like, I love Marvel movies because they are a safety net that allow me to do whatever independent movie. Yeah. And a lot of actors in Hollywood feel that way. And if the Marvel movies helped studios kind of also produce those kind of films, I would be totally on board. But for the most part, that's not what is happening.
No, I love the basic story of this movie. I think it's very, very strong. Despite I do wish there was some, you know, finagling with some characters, specifically Bryan Cranston, But I love how they're inspired by the tsunami earthquake disaster. I love this idea that, like, the reason Godzilla hasn't come out is because his food source is right there, and oh, I can eat these guys. they're chomping out all this radioactive enemy. Yum yum yum. I'm going after them, and I like that because the movie, while it doesn't outright say that Godzilla is a hero because he causes as much collateral damage, he's kind of like Superman, the Man of Steel. They do more with the idea that he's more of a force of nature, but he is one that Serizawa says, like, he's here to bring balance. And I really like that because we do get to have our monster stomping, ferocious Godzilla, but we also get to have a little bit of our heroic Godzilla too. And I love the fact this movie managed to have its cake and eat it too, and pulls it off, which is really, really difficult to do.
Yeah. And there's so many things that work in this movie from the script up, but they don't really in most of the legendary series kind of humanize Godzilla. We get our human kaiju in the form of King Kong eventually, but for the most part, it's
Godzilla doesn't have a tendency to have, like, lock eyes with one of the main humans, and, like, there's a moment of understanding there. It happens in this film, it happens in the last film, or not the last film, the next film with Serizawa.
Godzilla, like, doesn't seem to really care that much about humanity, but he cares
stomp, in terms of, like, monsters. The balance. But he's not gonna be. It's like if you had an ant farm. Like, I care about my ant farm, but, like, if I accidentally step on an ant, I'm not gonna cry about it. You know.
I would say for the most part, Godzilla or humanity versus Godzilla has been done in so many movies.
It's done to death, I don't like it.
I don't need it anymore. But this movie,
but with the exception of last year's film.
Well, I was about to say Godzilla Last One does it, but does it in also more of a closer to nature versus kind of humanity, or a monster or creature versus humanity. But yeah, this movie, humanity thinks it's versus Godzilla, but Godzilla just doesn't even, like, care.
No, y'all don't even register on my radar.
It's so funny. He's so, like, locked in alpha predator mode in taking out these weird mutant bugs that, yeah, it just seems like we're ants to him, which is, one of the things I love most about this movie.
It's funny because when you say that, you remind me of Janosch from Ghostbusters 2. You're the buzzing of flies to him.
Yeah, for real. On Wikizilla, there's an intense part in the end of this movie's entry that lists all the plot details that make this film similar to the 1995 film Gamera, the Guardian of the Universe. And it's not something I really thought of while I was watching it, but afterwards, I'm like, oh my goodness, there are a lot of similarities, because the Mutos are kind of like the Gauss. They are, the threat of, like, this creature spreading all over the world.
There's no child connection.
No, there's in later, like, legendary kid, films,
Ford's kid isn't, like, communicating with Godzilla.
In later films, there's kind of, like, a link between. Yes,
that's Kong.
Yeah, humans and, well, no, there's psychic links between Mothra and humans in the series.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But yeah, the Gauss are reawakened because of, human activity. And both films have the a bridge kind of attack scene. The army focuses on Godzilla and Gamera in both films compared to the Gauss, like the real threat in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Gamera beheads Gauss at the end of that movie before returning to the ocean, just like Godzilla does in this one with the female Muto. The director, Shusuke Kaneko, when these were brought to his attention in an interview, said, quote, "Gareth, of course he must have watched Gamera. It's all right, though." Yeah, I don't know if a lot of these were done purposely, but like I said, I see a lot of Gamera-like villains in the Muto's design.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree with you. A mix between the Gamera villains and obviously some, American giant monsters, between our propensity for giant insects and the most recent, like, giant monster, Clover,
Well, and we barely get to see the Clover Monster, but if you look up, you know,
well, I mean, I've seen the model. Yeah.
Yeah. they're very similar.
That toy, and like that toy sold out so quick, and it's like $300 now.
Miles, do you have a favorite scene in this movie of amazing scenes?
I have several. Obviously, the favorite scene with a capital F is the, as you just mentioned, the takedown of the Queen Muto, where Godzilla like cracks open her mouth, breathes his atomic breath into it, decapitating her. It's one of the best takedowns in the history of the franchise.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that on the big screen and just losing my mind.
They try to top it in the,
they constantly try to top it or repeat it.
It's hard.
It's so hard. So good.
Yeah. We get kind of the reverse of it in King of the Monsters, because he breathes through the neck of one of the heads of Ghidorah.
But this one's great. It's just like nothing's going to beat that first time, and it is one of the best takedowns in kaiju cinema history. It's so good. I have another one that's more of a little treat for me, and more of a little treat for me, like, because of the last decade. But and it makes me wish that a certain actor had more screen time. Jared Kiso is in this movie from Letterkenny.
Yes.
Doing an American accent as the Jumpmaster, and nothing would have like brightened my heart more to let him be a little bit more like Wayne from Letterkenny.
I just wanted him to squint once.
Yeah, exactly. And like I love him so much. Letterkenny is one of my favorite television comedies of all time, and Shoresy is actually right up there as well. It's on par, and I might even like Shoresy a little bit more. But when I watch this movie now, every single time he pops on, I do like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme, where I'm just like pointing at the screen, and I'm like, there he is,
right there.
And it makes me want him to, like, you know, drop down, like, clear ball, dog, you know.
So yeah, that's the thing that the last act really needs is a foil for Aaron Taylor Johnson.
I fully agree.
To work,
which would have been great
more.
If his dad was there.
Well, yeah, I just don't see his dad dropping in with him, but I feel like Jared Kiso could have been like his buddy on the boat with him at the end.
Yeah, because they have a couple conversations when. And like, I like they kind of almost have like Jared Kiso's character. I mean, he's just credited as Jumpmaster. He's not given a name. Doesn't consider him like, you know, like an interloper or whatever. Like, oh, you're the guy who can help us do this. Cool. I agree with you that if they had a little bit of a banter, because I don't think he dies. I think they get separated and he goes off.
I think most of the female,
a lot of crew does get killed.
Eats most of the, yeah, because they stay back on the shore.
But I think I tried to look, and I don't think his character gets killed. So I definitely would have liked that. But that's beside the fact. Jared Kiso being in this movie just makes me so freaking happy. And I've seen plenty of TikToks where people have gone back and like either added in lines from Letterkenny or ad-libbed their own.
I've not seen that.
And oh gosh, it's so good. But I'm taking up too much time. Patrick, do you have a favorite part in this movie?
So I think just what this movie does best, and it's stuff that no kaiju movie has done really before this or since. And I think Gareth Edwards understands the impact of the Titans really better than any other director, and shoots them in a way that they've really not been shot before, with the exception of maybe Matt Reeves. But that being found footage, it's its own thing.
Right.
Like, there's not really a way to not do POV shots, but Matt Reeves does it in a different way than Gareth Edwards. And Gareth Edwards, just, you go back and almost every single scene in which Godzilla is featured, you know, from the ground, there are things in the shots that help establish scale super well and show really how big he is. The first scene, the highway airport, Hawaiian airport scene, is really amazing. The Muto's on the railroad.
Did you not wish he would like walk up and be like, hey, I did take care of your kid, by the way?
Yes, you're welcome. No, but yeah, I think the capstone to this film is not the end fights, but rather the Golden Gate Bridge sequence. And it's so good. It is really the focus of, you know, the Monarch TV. We could see it again in that show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's the only fight or sequence that's done in broad daylight in the movie, and it has other kaiju, it has Godzilla, it has civilians, it has the military, it has a landmark getting absolutely destroyed. It just got everything I want, you know, from from a kaiju movie. And yeah, it's so good. There's even a little horror movie aspect. You get a jump scare in that sequence with the birds hitting the windshield of the bus. Yeah, and
that's a good one.
It's just so high tension. And I mean, all the kaiju fights are also really good. It's just, I wish they were done during the day. And we will get day kaiju fights later on in this
legendary series. We will get very broad daylight kaiju fights in this series.
But this, that sequence is, I think, something that they sold in the later trailers for the movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
I think the initial poster was like the skydivers with the red smoke coming down.
The halo jump is so good. It is also one of my favorite parts in this movie, but it is... it's amazing that it got, you know, put on.
I kept wondering, like, what if one of them accidentally landed on Godzilla's head or something? Because they couldn't see him, you know?
I was surprised that we didn't get to see some of them getting wiped out by a tail swipe or something.
Yeah. But
yeah. So we've already talked. I think both of us and critics have derided the fact that Bryan Cranston died in this film. But I do like that his death is kind of unglorious, you know? Like, It makes it seem like anyone is fair game. And, you know, like I said, in a lot of movies, the human story usually doesn't matter as much to the actual plot. And because humanity in this film is more like ants are to us, to these kaiju, it does feel like we are seeing just all the human characters from really far away. Like we are being held at arm's length on purpose. Even with someone, like you said, like Ken Watanabe, his character just seems, I think, like his character realizes the futility of them trying to stop these giant kaiju. So he's just like, yeah, no, you gotta let them fight, dude. Like, we're not going to have any
sell effect. Tickets on pay-per-view.
Let them fight. But yeah, I love that the main plot revolves around them nuking these creatures, which somebody should have told them, it's like, oh, that's not gonna work on Godzilla at the very least. But and then everything going awry, you know, the creatures getting the bomb taken into downtown San Francisco. It's like the worst place in Chinatown. It's really the heart of San Fran. And then them having to go in and extract it. It's great action movie stuff. Mm-hmm. It's great story. Miles, do you know much about the how this has fared with critics over the years, this movie?
I think it's done okay. I know it wasn't like a, you know, unanimous critically acclaimed film, but I think people for the most part, you know, had a good time with it.
I think this might be the highest rated of the legendary series, but there's a Forbes article by John Furrier called Hollywood is Godzilla the John Carter of 2014. It's so funny you mentioned John Carter before. He says in this article, you know, trust me, quote, hands down, Godzilla will be the biggest box office bomb of 2014. Godzilla, quote, Godzilla as a character is box office poison. Oh my God.
See, this is exactly what we're talking about at the top of the show. It's like, no.
Well, I think, you know, The previous movie that came out in the U.S., I think technically Final Wars released in some theaters, but that one...
The last one that had a real theatrical release was Godzilla 2000, I think.
Oh, yeah. Godzilla 2000, of course, 1998's TriStar film.
So here's the thing about that, though. Like, I mean, there really is no, like, in 2014, reputable way to say that Godzilla was box office poison just because of the way people felt about that movie. And Godzilla 1998 did not bomb. It didn't do as well as they wanted it to, but it cost $125 to $150 and made almost $400. So, like, it certainly wasn't what they wanted it to be, but at the same time, it was the third highest grossing film of the year.
No, this movie did a little bit better for Legendary. The budget was $160 million on the 2014 film, which, you know, they typically say you add like 1.5 to that.
Right.
But Legendary Pictures themselves estimated they needed to make $380 million globally in order to break even. And that some of that might be... Yeah, well, some of that might be that they had, you know, to pay Toho, they had to pay Warner Brothers a percentage. So like they had to have like a higher return to do well. And this movie did very well. It did both well domestically and internationally. A total box office haul of about $530 million. So they beat their estimate by about 100. And like I said, critically, I think this is the best reviewed of the Legendary series, but the series gets absolutely obliterated in some of these other films, so that's not very hard.
It doesn't matter. I love that some dipshit at Forbes said that like this was going to be box office poison, and then like 6 years later, Godzilla versus Kong is credited with bringing movies back post pandemic. Like, yeah. That makes me happier.
John Furrier's take was that if Peter Jackson couldn't turn King Kong into a hit, this indie film director, Gareth Edwards, would obviously be a complete bungle.
I guess by making a movie a full hour shorter probably helped.
What are you talking about?
King Kong's like 3 hours long, dude.
Well, shorter than that one. Yeah, sorry, I was stalling because I was trying to confirm.
I'm happy to clown on that guy.
I was trying to confirm that.
Continue with your
Technically, this has the same score, Rotten Tomatoes score. It's a 76% for Godzilla. Same score as Godzilla versus Kong, but that one has a much higher audience score, believe it or not. The audience score only really goes up for the Legendary series. And this one's the lowest, if you can believe that, Miles. A 66% for.
Well, like I said at the top of the show, there was a feeling of like, we liked it, but at the time. And, you know, because I think people were, you know, were happy there was another monster. They weren't really sold on the design of Mutos, which I think has everything about this movie has aged very well, partially because of the MonsterVerse continuing and building upon it. And we can go back and look at everything they did and be like, oh, yeah, then this is great. And because I know a lot of people who are like, oh, yeah, I liked it, but. And so, like, I feel like a lot of my friends were kind of like in the 6-7 range when it first released. And I think that would be different now. Yeah. And so it's not that they were like disliked the movie. It's just it was less enthusiastic than the later Legendary movies, which actively give people what they've been asking.
It's crazy that, yeah, with hindsight, this movie really does, I think, read critically different, even though, like I said, Gareth Edwards never had a sequel in mind. He said, quote, I wanted to make a story that begins and ends and you leave on a high. That's all we cared about when we were making this. Just this film. If this film is good, the others can come, but let's just pay attention to this and not get sidetracked by other things. I think he definitely succeeded in that aspect. This is a movie, though, to be fair, when I finish it, I want more. And maybe that's because I know now more comes later. But yes, I want more from this universe almost immediately. And sadly, we don't get a sequel for.
Well, and I think
5 years.
I like. Well, technically, you only had to win a couple to get the next stage of the MonsterVerse. But I like the attitude Gareth Edwards has, because I think something gets lost when you have these cinematic universes. Marvel suffered from it a great deal, especially post Endgame, but even during the Infinity Saga, where it's like things feel almost like a 2.5 hour special or episode and don't feel like an individual film. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can work in your favor if you do everything really well and it's super fun. But other times you're like, okay, well, this was kind of a waste of time because all we did was spend 2 hours setting up the real thing. And so I think it's smart for these movies to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very important. And by and large, the MonsterVerse has more or less done that. I mean, the once Kong and Godzilla get involved, the two Kong movies, X and Versus, do feel more kind of like a new series is starting. But yeah. I do still feel like they have enough of an individual feel to them. They don't feel like, oh, I'm setting this up for the show. Or, oh, now you have to go and watch, you know, season 2 of Loki to get this reference here in Deadpool and Wolverine.
That's the thing. I love Kong Skull Island. I think it's a great addition to the universe. You don't need to see it if you want to jump into Godzilla or versus Kong, which
is even with good. It being referred to in Monarch, if you hadn't seen Kong Skull Island, it's okay. You should see Kong Skull Island. Spoiler warning for a future episode, but it's still, you know, itself.
That's the thing. But it's also a great standalone film that technically it's the same Kong, but they're such different characters between that movie and the next one. It's, you know, night and day. But yeah, same thing with this Godzilla. And I think, you know, if you look at the one from Godzilla X Kong, this is a very different Godzilla. But yeah, this movie was a success. And critics enjoyed this one a good deal. This was fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, maybe not certified fresh. I forget what the difference is, but this did pretty well when it came out, and maybe not, I guess, Marvel movie well, or it was expected to be more of a tentpole, but it did well enough. Obviously, we got a sequel and then a series of sequels, and they decided to bring back King Kong in kind of the same way, and those movies really kind of took off.
Mm-hmm.
After that, are you ready, Miles, to end this episode and get to our rating of
Let's do it.
Godzilla 2014.
How do you feel? What's your personal rating, bud?
So I spoiler warning, and this will come very quickly. I'm not giving this a perfect score. I feel like when it came out, this was a 10 out of 10 enjoying experience for me. But in hindsight, is closer to what I'm giving it today. A 9 out of 10 for my personal enjoyment. I love this movie for what it is, but if I am thinking of my top three just MonsterVerse movies that I want to watch, this is not in my top three. And I think that's crazy because this is so good. It's so technically amazing.
Also speaks to how good the MonsterVerse is.
Well, and how entertaining the MonsterVerse is. This movie looks beautiful. This is a lot of fun in places. It has earned its place in the start of the new universe of films. But yeah, in hindsight, it is such an odd man out from the series. It's so incongruous with what the series becomes. It's crazy. But that is also kind of the feel for the original Godzilla. The original Godzilla is as far away from its Showa era sequels, I feel like, as this one is from the rest of the MonsterVerse. So yeah, I'm giving it a 9 out of 10 for personal enjoyment. It's not my favorite, so it's hard for me to give it a 10 out of 10. What about you, Miles?
I'm actually right there with you. 9 out of 10 for me. I think this movie is, it's absolutely excellent. And it's a great reintroduction for the King of the Monsters in the 21st century for the States. Obviously, we had the Millennium series, and I think very highly of some of those films, but I think this is the perfect kind of, like, if you're going to remodernize Godzilla, this is a great way to do it. The things that take me out of the movie, really, I mean, and I know I've harped on this, you know, throughout this episode, but Bryan Cranston's death being where it is, and also honestly wanting to spend more time in Japan, kind of going through some of that stuff. I did want some more background. I already know this movie's, you know, 123 minutes long, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, unfortunately, so they left some stuff on the cutting room floor. I wish they didn't.
Yeah, but it feels that way to a degree that does distract me a little bit. That said, I think the story is fantastic. I think all of the actors are great. I actually would have also liked a little more Elizabeth Olsen, just a little bit more. And she's a great actress. I like her a lot, and always have. I also wanted a little bit. I just wanted more from the humans. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, the human stuff's so boring. But I actually really thought they did a great job at making me care about all of these human characters to the degree I wanted a little bit more of them. And I'm just saying, like, if this movie's 123 minutes long, maybe make the movie 135, 140 minutes, you know, 2.5 hours.
124 minutes, because they cut out like a 10 second cameo from original Godzilla actor Akira Takarada. He had
criminal.
And Gareth Edwards has gone on record as saying that he feels extremely bad about this, because that would have
been, as well he should,
the last Godzilla movie I think Akira Takarada had been in, but or one of the last. It was such a small cameo, and it doesn't really like, you know, drag on or anything. He's just like a customs person when Aaron Taylor comes to Japan for the first time. And
see, that should have kept that. Absolutely. Because he just appears. Really. Yeah,
you can find it on YouTube. Like I said, the entire sequence is 20 seconds, but his cameo is like legit just.
I can guarantee you the Japanese audience would have absolutely loved that in theaters. I would have loved that as a fan of the franchise. But
yeah, I think they were worried about it being too small of a role, and like maybe that would have been.
It's a tip of the cap. Like it's
yes,
the fact that an American movie was actually making that sort of effort, I think, is pretty good. But all that aside, you know, this movie is insanely entertaining. It's a great origin story. They give you like the sets, and we'll get to this in a little bit. Like. Look phenomenal. They're gorgeously shot. While I do wish Godzilla had a little more offense in just to kind of like show, but that first reveal of Godzilla is excellent. You get the awe-inspiring and the literal awesomeness of Godzilla in this film with one of the best takedowns of the entire franchise. I mean, it's one of those things where I wish we could give 9.5s. Other than that, like, yeah, I'm right there with you. This is a 9 out of 10. It's not perfect for me. There are other movies in this franchise that I enjoy more, but this is a very, very, very great movie.
Oh, what about its technical aspect? Where do you rate Godzilla 2014 technically?
I mean, the script issues that I personally had that take me out are still present here. That said, I think this movie is very, very good. Very well directed, and like I love the look of where did they live in Japan? Did they say exactly?
Great question. I think it's actually a made up place.
Okay, when they're
Janjira nuclear power plant is not a real power plant,
right? But what was the town outside of the Janjira power plant? Was that called anything?
I think gotta go to Wikizilla to see if that's right. It says it's in the vicinity of Tokyo, but I'm not sure what
when Ford and Joe are sneaking in there, and you get this kind of cool like post-apocalyptic, almost Last of Us style like exploration of this like dead city. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. The shots in Hawaii, the tsunami that's caused by the monsters is. Mm-hmm. Amazing. I love that shot with the guy running through into the hotel and the door closing as the water's coming through and you see the cracks, and it's a very well done tsunami scene. The special effects are just excellent. I do very much like the design of Godzilla, and I over time have come to love the Mutos. Yeah, my only real criticism is I wish the script was tailored a little bit better to give just a little more oomph. Bryan Cranston's death just haunts this film for me, and it enough so that I'm still going to give it a 9 out of 10 here as well, because I know, but like it's that big of a deal, because when you see him on screen, he is just a force, and like gives this movie so much of its weight when it's building up to the monsters, and I love it so much. And that's my big hang up. I do think this movie is fantastically acted. Mm-hmm. I think that they did a great job setting all of the fights up, even though they're not as dynamic as they will be in the future. They still look great. You have the best Godzilla takedown ever made. So this is still a very great film. My 9 is not in any way saying that this is, I mean, 9's a great score. So like, I'm assuming you're a little bit higher based off your gasp.
Well, I do have it at a 10 out of 10, but I do.
So, yes,
have the same reservations for that aspect of the script. I think mostly it's and like I said, I think the audience score is so low because they were kind of maybe falsely assuming that he was going to be the main character of the movie. I think if they hadn't made that promise, people wouldn't have been as shocked or dismayed when he disappears from the film, because he does, you know, literally.
I also think people wanted a Japanese monster, because that was a big response. After the film was like, why didn't we get so and so, or at least Rodan or Chris, or you know, I did hear a lot of that from people. But yeah, it's a non-factor for me now.
That's the thing. I think I was the same way when the movie came out, but the Mutos have grown on me. And because I know Bryan Cranston's character is going to die, his death has less of an effect every time I watch this movie. And
oh no, I burn an effigy every single time it happens.
Like I appreciate while he is on screen, you know, as opposed to, I guess, the shark of the first time I watched it. But I do think this is the best looking kaiju movie of all time. The scale, the action, just about every single frame is a work of art. It gets a lot of the same criticisms that a lot of the kaiju movies of the time do, which is, you know, a lot of the action is at night and things like that. But like I said, my favorite part is during the day. So yeah, stylistically, I think this is a perfect 10. I thought about docking it a little bit because of script issues, but I think they served a purpose, and Bryan Cranston's death did come as, you know, purposefully in the film. And yeah, I do dislike how detached some of the main characters feel from the chaos around them. Mm-hmm. But you realize this isn't really a big emotional film, but it is more a macro cause. It's like a look down on these humans as they are, you know, just reacting to the realization that they are no longer the top of the food chain. You know, they're all just seem like in shell shock. A lot of this film, like Aaron Taylor Johnson, just seems completely out of it the back half of the movie. And part of that is he just lost his father, but he just seems like, you know, he turns into a soldier more than anything. And part of that's good and part of that's bad, but like, yeah, you forget he's like a husband, a father. He just turns into something that's trying to kill these monsters. But yeah, the film looks, sounds great. Kaijus are amazing. I do want to give this a 10 out of 10 because I don't want my score to drop down, Miles, because I am giving this a 10 out of 10 for its importance as well. You know, we looked at movies like Pacific Rim and Cloverfield as the start of the current kaiju boom that we have right now in the latter half of the 2010s and in the 2020s. But I feel like this movie sets such a stage of success for the MonsterVerse and allows for Legendary's dominance to continue on that I do think this is one of the most important kaiju movies of all time. A lot of films are thriving based on the success and the reintroduction of Godzilla as a concept to not just U.S. audiences, but world audiences. And in television series, too. We get some television series because of this show. And I hope so, eventually, more kaiju in general, not just Godzilla movies. But I mean, we already have gotten more Gamera stuff, which I'm excited about. But while this film doesn't feel like it should be the start of a larger universe, the next couple movies really do, I think, cement this as a rival to even the Heisei era. And this is such a strong start for that series. I'm giving this the same score that I gave the original Godzilla for its importance. And I think since the 1950s OG Godzilla, this is a really important one. It erased the foul taste of 1998's Roland Emmerich film from me. So yeah, for this being, as far as importance goes, one of the most important Godzilla and therefore kaiju films. Definitely a 10 out of 10 for me, Miles. But what about you? Are you feeling the same?
You know, I feel like I keep disappointing you with my 9s out of 10s, but
don't you dare.
I won't hear because I fully agree. We keep talking about the things that like have kind of kicked off the golden age of kaijus, things that have like laid the foundation while the kaiju was dormant. This puts everything front and center. This kicks off the MonsterVerse. It kicks off the full-on resurrection of Godzilla. Because of this film, we have two excellent Japanese entries in the Godzilla canon with more to come. It has revitalized kaiju cinema. It has revitalized the Godzilla franchise, the Kong franchise. People's kind of excitement about kaiju is an all-time high. Mm-hmm. This is one of the most influential kaiju films of all time because of what it kicks off. Does it mean it's the best? You know, that's up for you to decide. But in terms of its actual importance, this understands the history of the character. It does something a little bit different, plays with expectations, it plays with the genre tropes, and does so in a fashion that paved the way for the golden age of kaiju cinema that we are still in right now. Like, we are currently waiting for a sequel to Godzilla Minus One, a sequel to Godzilla Kong the New Empire, a second season of Monarch, and then other things that have followed the success. I mean, there have been a bunch of weird little kaiju movies that have come out of Japan. Everyone else is starting to dip their toe in. Like, this movie has, you know, restarted everything. It pressed the reset button, and we are now in an age where everyone is on board with kaiju cinema. And I mean, that cannot be overstated how important that is. This is what makes it one of the most important kaiju films, not in the modern era, but of all time, to keep that love of kaiju eiga not just alive, but thriving. So yeah, absolutely 10 out of 10. There's no other score that this could have gotten.
Welp, that's good news, but maybe bad news for Godzilla 2014. I'm at a weak 10 out of 10, not a perfect one. You're at a 9.3. That is going to bring our podcast final for this film to a 9 out of 10.
I'm perfectly fine with that.
I thought that it could go up to 10 out of 10, but to be honest, I think there are going to be other 10 out of 10s in this series.
No, and I think we also acknowledged what this movie does so well and what it means. And this is, I mean, this kicks off the modern era in full swing and does so well.
Yeah, we are putting this pretty far ahead of most critics, but like I said, we're not really reviewing these as just films. We're reviewing these as kaiju films, and this one, boy howdy, this film does deliver.
Nah, this is better than Martin Scorsese's Silence by a country mile. Let's just make people mad while I'm here. Well, I love
it's
that.
So funny. This movie just really does. It is so serious, and it's dour in parts, but is also just such
like
a
silence. Yeah, you're cool, right.
Cool film, and yeah, well, like we said, the original 1954 movie is also dour and kind of sad, but. Awesome.
Well, I mean, I will still say, I think in terms of like weight and stuff, the 54 movie is still, you know, tops it in terms of its script and stuff. But yeah, this is still a great film.
Right. That is going to do it for this episode. 2014's Godzilla is getting a 9 out of 10 from Kaiju vs. History, which if you want to argue with us, tell us this tough. Is not. Not that good. You can find us on social media at Kaiju versus History, or just email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. We have a website, kaijuversushistory.com, where you can find our episodes, wherever podcasts are. If you want to give us a rating or review, we appreciate it. Our Letterboxd account has our reviews in 5-star format. We do 10 on the show, 10 out of 10s, but you can also see things that we have upcoming in the future. Miles, speaking of that, what are we doing next week? How are we topping 2024 ending with Godzilla 2014?
We're not. You can also piggyback on that. You can also go to cosmiccrit.com and click on the Discord link. We have a Kaiju vs. History channel in the Cosmic Crit Discord.
And everyone that listens to this podcast is already on.
I understand that, but still, just in case. And if you want to argue that this movie is not that good, I'm a mod, so I can just ban you. But thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you next time. We move from a new classic to a new cash grab as we examine a sequel to Gareth Edwards' 2010 film that got him the Godzilla gig to begin with. But will the more militaristic bent on what was essentially love in the time of kaiju be a detour or a dead end? Please tune in next week for History versus Monsters Dark Continent. Bum, 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 bum.